Hey everyone, welcome back. We have not done a podcast in a while, but we're really excited today. We have a special guest. She's the recent winner of the Canadian IGP Championships at the CWDF Nationals last weekend. We have Candace here. Welcome, Candace.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Cass is here as well.
Hey everybody.
So we're going to ask quite a few questions, and again, we're excited to have Candace here because she has a lot of experience, not just with working dogs, but with pets as well. And she works with fitness, and she's also worked as an vet clinic for a very long time, and with exotics. So a lot of experience. So we have a couple questions to start with. Hi, Candace. Do you want to just quickly introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Candace. I've been working with dogs for about 25 years. Wow. In dog training, at vets, at dog trainers, a rehab place for fitness and rehab for dogs post-surgical. And I'm happy to be here.
Okay, good, good. Okay, so you started off working with in a boarding facility, right?
Correct. Is that what
you
did? Yeah, when I was 16, I started working at a boarding kennel that also bred German Shepherds, and that was my, how I got introduced to dogs. At the time, I didn't even actually have a dog yet.
Oh, wow.
And started working at a kennel with like 80 dogs, and I learned pretty fast to not get bitten.
Awesome, awesome. And then, so you were at a boarding facility first, and then what did you do next? When did you move?
So I was at one boarding kennel for about 7 years, and then I went to another boarding kennel for about 8 years. And around that time, I also started working on a dog trainer. And then I moved to a vet, like a general practice vet that also saw the exotics. And then after 14 years there, I went to a rehab vet. So now I have an awesome job where I get to help dogs walk and, rehab nice. Them that way. And then sport dogs and senior dogs. So it's pretty rewarding.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Okay, good. And did you have a family dog growing up?
Yeah, I did. My first dog was actually, again, when I started working at the kennel, and I had a little Cavalier King Charles named Parker.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, good.
Very cute.
Good. So what got you interested in working with dogs originally?
I just always loved dogs, even growing up. Again, I didn't have any, but I just always felt really close to them and was drawn that way.
Yeah, okay, got it.
It was just a passion of mine.
Nice, nice. Okay. How'd you get started competing with your dogs?
Well, the dog trainer that I started to work at the time, I had, I trained my little Cavalier. But as an adult, I got a Bernese Mountain Dog and started working at a dog trainer with him. And because he saw that I had a passion for animals and some talent, he asked me to be an instructor there. And in order to be an instructor there, you have to train a Canadian obedience champion.
That's
so
great.
That mm-hmm. is actually how I got into it, with a good old Bernese Mountain Dog. He was an awesome dog.
So was that, at the time, a Bernese Mountain Dog competing, was that like not ordinary?
Yeah, unusual for sure. Because although they are a working breed dog, they're not typically seen in obedience competitions for sure. Mm-hmm. Especially not, CKC obedience. But he was always keen. I made training fun for him. And he was just a really special dog. So I ended up getting his Otch, which is an obedience trial champion. I think he was probably the only Bernese Mountain Dog that year to get it.
Wow.
So, wow.
Yeah.
I know you had an interesting story as to how you got him as well, right?
Yeah. I was working at the kennels at that time as well as other things. And he was a client of ours, and the owners, he was about, I think, maybe 8 months. He was unruly. He was naughty. He was adorable, but just goofy. And he was a bit too much for the owners. The owners had, their daughter had a baby. They were traveling a lot. And they came in to drop him off at the kennel and were like, you know what? We're looking for a home for him. So I took him.
That's a lucky,
and
lucky
I mean,
find.
Yeah. Well, I was extremely lucky that he, it was meant to be and that he fell into my lap. And he turned out to be an amazing dog, an amazing intro to the world of dog sports.
Wow,
getting
that's awesome.
Hooked into that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember when we first came to see you, you just had a bunch of ribbons covering
yeah.
your entire training floor. So yeah, very nice. Yeah. So what was the first sport you did? You said CKC obedience?
CKC obedience.
Okay.
So I got his obedience trial champion, which is an Otch. And then I did some rally obedience with him. I did draft dogs, so karting with him. I did some freestyle with him. Did some world competitions that were available at that time through video. I think that's all I did with him. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, that's great. And then did you do any other sports with your next dog? Because your next dog would have been...
My Sheltie.
Flirt, right? It would have been Flirt.
Yeah, Flirt was my next dog that was a little Sheltie. So I did, again, some CKC obedience with her. I did some rally obedience with her. And I did a sport called tri-ball, which is urban ball herding with her.
Oh, wow.
I kind of like doing sports that... like are in tune to what the dogs were bred to do.
Yeah.
So my Bernese Mountain Dog, it was just a natural thing to get into karting with him and do his karting titles. And then with my Sheltie, I did, you know, a herding instinct test, which was fun. But then I did a little bit of tri-ball, which is the urban ball herding, which was fun for her too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
and what exactly is that?
And freestyle I did with her too.
What is that?
Urban ball herding is your dog, her... Like they herd in, like they're like exercise balls or large balls, and they're kind of set up like a pool set up in a triangle, and they have to herd the balls in.
That's like yoga balls.
That must be so fun to watch.
Hmm? Like yoga balls.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty
so they, they can't bite the ball and they can't kick the ball. They have to target their nose on it and herd the balls in. So there's an order that they should herd them into you. It's not a very common sport, but it's it should be. It's so fun and. You know, it's pretty rewarding when the dogs kind of have fun being able to do that. And it's a lot of control. Like, it's a lot of distance work. And, you know, there's a skill sort of division as well where they have to go around certain directions of the ball. And then you have to do position changes with the dog, you know, behind the balls and then push it into you, into a net. And, yeah, it's pretty fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that is super cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about your current dogs and what sports you're doing.
Yeah. so, again, on lines of doing what the dogs were designed to do, I have... currently two Belgian Malinois. I had another one that I lost last year. So when I got them, I sort of became interested in the sport of IGP or Schutzhund or, IPO. It's changed its name
a lot.
But, you know, it has components of tracking, obedience, and protection.
Got it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you do IGP with both. What made you want to do IGP over other sports? I'm guessing the same reason of doing what the dog wants.
Got it. Just it's really nice to see the dog shine at kind of what their breeding was for, you know. And Malinois are nice dogs and they're loyal and they're intense. But you know, you do want an outlet for all of that that bitiness.
Yeah, exactly.
And why IGP over any other bite sports?
I wasn't sure, but I knew some people in the sport, and that was really, you know, what drew me to that particular sport. So I had no experience in tracking before I started, and at first I was like, yeah, am I gonna like tracking? Should I, you know, explore the other bite sports? But, you know, eventually found a supportive group and got introduced and knew some people and went that direction instead.
Good. That actually leads me to another question. If someone is looking to do a dog sport, let's say they don't have a Malinois, like any dog, what should they look to do first?
What should they look to do first?
Yeah, should they look to find like a person to mentor them first, or maybe they should try to do something
or a club that you can go visit and, you know, talk to the people, meet their dogs, because, you know, depending on the sport, and certainly IGP in particular, it is extremely time consuming, and you have to really love the relationship with your dog and love, you know, that time with them, but also love the people that you're spending a lot of your free time with, because I always say that, like, IGP in particular is kind of like three sports in one, so it's a lot of time. And if you don't like the people you're spending time with, it becomes, you know, pretty monotonous and not fun anymore. And you won't continue in the sport. So, you know, going to visit multiple clubs, you know, talking to the people, seeing if their training methods match with your training methods, because there's a lot of variation and there's lots of roads to the same end goal. But, you know, it depends on what road you want to take and what you feel comfortable doing. And how you want your journey to go.
Got it.
There are definitely lines that you should have that I'm not going to take that direction, regardless.
Got it. I mean, I think even one of the reasons we got involved in the sport, I think probably the only reason is just because of you. Compared to people we've met in other sports. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So who are some trainers or even competitors that you look up to? They could be local, maybe mm-hmm. international.
Yeah, I mean, definitely like Marco Cosconcello and Sarah Pirelli at Canimo are awesome people. And,
yeah, nice.
You know, they really think about the dog and their emotions. Diamond Hansel, who I got my one dog from, is a really good competitor. His handling is flawless. And he's a nice guy, too. Those are ones in IPO that are just really good people.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. You have a question? Okay, cool. okay, so... sorry, we have a lot of questions, so I just get sometimes lost in them. Do you want to quickly tell us about your current dog's personalities and how they are?
Yes. my current dogs right now are Fizzgig. So Fizzy is just turned 4 years old. And he's the one I'm currently competing with. He's goofy. He's, you know, he's all enthusiasm all in time, which sometimes gets him into trouble. He really gives like 200% in everything
yeah,
he does.
Yeah, definitely say 200.
From like
yes.
snuggling to obedience. he just wants to do well, but again, he needs to sometimes take things down a notch. and then I have Punky. Punky's just a year old. And she is kind of a work in progress. She's spunky. She's funny. She really likes to snuggle, too. But she's one of those dogs that when she gets frustrated, she can easily kind of go overboard, snapping her teeth everywhere. And she'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting journey with her to get to where I need to go. But, you know, love them both. They're related, so that's kind of nice to see kind of the differences and the similarities between the two of them. But those are my two goofballs.
Good. Yeah. And what are your current short-term goals with both of them?
Well, short-term for Fizz is planning to go to, Czech in September and compete at the FCI Worlds with him.
Wow,
I
very
just
nice.
Made that decision, so it'll be kind of a good learning experience. He's never flown before, uh-huh. So that'll be interesting.
He's gonna love it.
And this will be his first world level competition.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
yours in IGP as well.
Correct.
Yes. Very exciting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and I have no idea how it's gonna go. But you know, I hope we can just get like a good experience there. He can have a good experience there. You know, I can handle him the best of my ability, keep him calm, and hopefully we can
keep him calm.
Put in a good, you know, solid, you know, I have no, you know, I'm not going there going, I'm going to win the world, but I want him to do well and have fun, and I want to make sure that it's as, you know, stress-free as possible for everybody.
Yeah, I just want everyone to have, like, a good idea, because I know a lot of people will listen to this, but... if they haven't met Fizz, which most people haven't, they're all going to start wondering, oh, he's like, you know, he's a Malinois, but he is, I do think he's one of a kind, because we have met hundreds and hundreds of Malinois, too.
Kind.
And he's just one of those dogs where, like, the more you do, the more intense he gets. Like, his energy does not go down,
yeah.
And he'll do it until his body gives out, which is interesting. Like, imagine, like, a marathon runner running. Almost full tilt, but getting faster by the minute makes no sense.
And more worked up.
Yeah, faster by the minute. It just does. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Yeah. Like, it's how everyone describes Malinois to be, and then most Malinois aren't really like that. They're just like, to actual people who own them or see them all the time, they just seem like normal dogs. But Fizzy is like the definition of what people think a Malinois is.
Yeah,
he's like 10 out of 10, 100% all the time.
Yeah. I always said when he was a baby, I'd be like, everything's his favorite. Like, driving to the store is his favorite. Tracking's his favorite. Like, everything. He's like, oh, yes, I love this. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. It's so interesting. Yes.
I went to Candace's house last week, and I had my arms of my sweater wrapped around my waist because it was getting a little hot outside. And I stepped into Candace's house, and Fizzy was so excited to see me. He grabbed me by the sweater and started yanking me all around the house. And I couldn't do anything because I just started laughing and it made him more worked up and excited. He's like, oh my God, they love this. Yeah, he's
probably not a good thing, but
no, it was hilarious. I couldn't even believe it.
That's right.
That was
yeah,
very
he's
funny.
One of a kind.
He has so, short-term goal with Punky.
Yeah, short-term
goal. Oh gosh. I think really like... Really, the initial goal with her is to just become more of a team with her, a little bit more on the same wavelength that way. I think she's coming along. I think she'll be fun. I think mm-hmm. obedience will be a little bit of a challenge because she does have that independence to her,
yes.
Where Fizzy doesn't really. But I also think that independence can be really good for both the protection and the tracking phases of IGP. So mm-hmm. I think she definitely... We'll get there eventually,
yeah.
hopefully. She has a lot of different, things that, things that just will benefit her in the sport. Like she shines in other aspects
yeah.
where Fizzy shines in other ways. Like
yeah.
they're both good dogs. And again, no dog's ever perfect. So regardless of what sport you're doing, don't like assume that every dog is, I'm looking for that perfect dog because it's
yeah.
never going to happen.
Yeah.
So I definitely think they have different skills that are their favorites and what they're going to shine at.
Yeah.
Fizzy's enthusiastic and Punky is enthusiastic when it's what she wants to do.
She's like kind of in her
trouble twos.
She's like a bratty teenager.
Yeah, she's in her traveling phase. She wants to go travel the world.
She wants to go to Tahiti and she wants to go to Thailand.
Yeah, yeah. And then when
she's like, don't talk to me, Mom.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find myself.
yeah,
she's like a teenager right now.
Yes,
exactly. But,
Mom, give me your credit card.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. When people say, oh, I wonder what the dogs are speaking and what they're saying. And I'm like, I don't think I really want to know when it comes to Punky. She's saying to me half the time.
She's definitely named appropriately.
Yeah.
I know. Probably maybe a mistake. I should have called her like Cuddle Bug or something.
Or like Cookie.
Sweetheart.
Just Cookie. She would be nice and sweet.
So then what would be, this is like not really pet related. It could be sport related.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your just overall favorite breed of dog? You can even list two if you need to.
You know what?
For yourself.
For myself, I really love the Malinois. For me, it's really the only... Like, when I started, I grew up with Cavaliers. I got my Bernese Mountain Dog. I got my Sheltie. And then I got my Malinois. And it's really the only breed that I was like, I need another and another.
Yeah.
It's really the only breed that I've had twice in a row. And I could get another one, like, next. Like, I just love their devotion.
Yeah.
I love their devotion. And my dogs are sport dogs, but they're my family. Like, I love my dogs to pieces.
Yeah.
They're super cute
when they're on the couch, watching wrestling.
They love wrestling, those guys.
Punky watches TV.
Yeah. I saw from your videos.
So funny. There's this one commercial that comes on. It's like a TELUS commercial with rabbits flying by. And it's not even about the rabbits. It's something about the music that she'll be like chewing a bone and that commercial will come on and she'll just perk her ears up and be like,
this is my favorite show.
It's
my favorite show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she'll chew her bone when the commercial's on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like totally. It's so weird. It's that one. I think they like tapped into the like dog psyche with the TELUS commercial.
Yeah. Well, good. And
would you ever consider getting like a German Shepherd to do the sport or as a pet? I guess obviously both.
I don't think German Shepherds are really 100% my jam.
Yeah.
I've done some fostering of some puppies,
yeah.
and although they're lovely, I just I find them vocal and kind of and they're just a little
stubborn. I don't know.
I don't find them stubborn. They're just slower. Like, it's so funny. Like, I had this one dog that was a lovely dog, and actually probably one of my favorite shepherds. And I had. Her for a bit, and it was funny. I would do a session with her of like free shaping with the clicker and some target stuff, and I would be like, I don't even know how that session went. So like like Malinois, like you're like, oh, like light bulbs, like
yeah.
crazy. They're just
yeah clear
they're
progress
so
in
there.
A session.
And then the shepherds, you're like, oh, I have no idea. And then you'll do a session like the next day, and I'm like, well, okay, she does, they do learn it. It's just different.
Yeah.
It's okay. Just like, I'll be like, wow, I guess it did absorb in your brain, but it's just not that instant gratification of a Malinois.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh,
which
got
I like.
Pieced and, it together.
Yeah. And the Malinois, I always say that I really like needy dogs. I really like the ones that want to crawl down your throat and sit on the couch with you and just like look into your eyes. Like, I love you so much. I want to be with you forever. Like, I love needy dogs.
Yeah.
And shepherds
yeah.
aren't needy. Like they do their own thing, you know, but I like that I'm on the couch and I have two Malinois on my lap.
I just love it. Yeah, they are great. They're super sweet.
They're like my little bit of my security blanket. Like I don't feel 100% sometimes when they're not with me.
Yeah. Okay, do you have a least favorite breed? And you know, like, honestly, answer whatever, because on this podcast I've said some over and over nonsense, so I don't think people will care.
I really like to read dogs as an individual when I meet them, but there's definitely breeds that I always, when I hear one's coming in, I'm always like, okay, let's, you know, be wise about how we handle this dog. So, you know, definitely, like, little Chihuahuas have big personalities, and they can be a challenge when you're trying to, you know, do rehab or you know, vaccinate them. Sometimes I feel like their heads can rotate all the way around their bodies. Pugs are dramatic for nail clippings. Like, there's just, like Shiba Inus. A lot of terriers can be, you know, a little bit of a handful. I don't think I have a least favorite, but there's definitely ones that I definitely try to be open-minded, but there's a certain level of, you know that I've met enough of them to be a little wary when I first and some people think about that with shepherds, but I've also I like shepherds. Like, I've met so many really good ones that I don't have that. They're not my jam, but I love shepherds. But yeah, Shiba Inus, American Eskimos.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's always like a general pile of like
chow chows.
Yikes.
Akitas.
I mean, like, Cass and I have this class starting soon, and there's I saw the attendance the other day, and it's a new class, so we've never met the dogs before. They have no clue how to do anything. They've never done training. There's a foxhound in the class, a husky, a beagle, some beagles can be really hard.
Yep.
There's another coonhound, I think.
So hounds.
And then there's
terriers.
Like a German Shepherd Chow, isn't there?
There's a Chow German Shepherd mix. And, you know, like, these dogs are all, like, they're all over one. Some are, I think, one or two are over
two. Yeah, I'd be
and a
sick
half,
that
three.
Day for sure.
Yeah.
And they're all in the same class. And we looked at the end. And the class is not full yet. So we're like, this is going to be.
That's full.
It's full now.
Yeah.
It's full now.
Yeah. We should chop off the attendance right there.
I when I meet the dogs, I try to have an open mind, but there's definitely that. That I've met like 50 of you, and you know, 30 are sketch.
Got it. What do you think is the best dog for the average person that just wants to get a pet? You know, like maybe
golden retriever,
golden retriever. That's what we tell everyone too.
Cavaliers, poodles.
Havanese, so whenever we mention like a lab. Or whatever, a golden, and people say, oh, they don't want a big dog or whatever.
Poodle.
Or
they
don't want a shedding dog. What
they
would you say? Poodle?
Poodle.
Cavalier. And what if they want a small one? Cavalier. Havanese, you said too?
Havanese, Bichon.
Okay. At least we know a good list to send.
Yeah.
Because it's a question we get probably every 2 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always say lab. People don't listen. They think labs are boring, and they think they're slobby and and large. And they just
and
don't
a lot of people think they're ugly, and they're
yeah,
so
they
cute.
Think they're ugly.
Yeah, no, they're good family. They're good family dogs.
Yeah.
You also have to be careful of where you get the dog from and meeting the parents, making sure the lines are kind of the attributes that you want as a family pet. But, you know, usually those are really safe.
They're pretty
pets.
Safe. Yeah.
Usually even a backyard bred lab turns out fine.
Exactly.
Even
true.
The worst
yeah.
bred lab will
it's
probably be okay.
Yeah.
Goldens, you know, I've seen some also that have not been good. Yeah.
Yeah, we see some.
But generally, you know, you're pretty safe with a golden too.
Yeah, we stopped recommending goldens recently because for some reason, there are goldens I meet nowadays that are 6-7 months old, and we try to like put a collar on them in class, and they growl at me.
Yeah, I've seen some like that too.
And we see it like without like every single Golden we see now is like that. So
yeah,
and you haven't seen good Cavaliers either. See, I've only met really super sweet Cavaliers.
We have a nice cute one in class.
We have
but,
a really cute.
I haven't seen them because I'm from Scarborough. There's no good dogs.
I like Cavaliers.
I grew up with Cavaliers. I
like Cavaliers. Yeah, we have a cute one right now.
Birdie's Mountain Dogs. They're usually really nice dogs too.
I love them.
We've seen.
I love them.
Two. Yeah. In the last year, we mostly see Bernedoodles, which are okay, but they're Bernedoodles. They're not like purebred dogs.
Yeah, there's not a lot of consistency.
Yeah, there's no consistency with the personality. Yeah.
I've met some nice ones, but also some that have not been nice at all. And I would say more on that end of the spectrum, actually.
And they can
a shame because they're like anxious both lovely dogs. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And we've always seen that. They get stressed pretty quickly, too.
Yeah. Bernice is always nice.
Yeah.
And in your opinion, what type of pet dog or breed should the average owner stay away from? Let's even say it's their first or second dog. It's probably just all the ones you mentioned earlier.
Anything high energy is going to be a challenge for anybody with a family. Okay. Terriers, they have a lot of like natural instinct in there. And if you're brand new to the breeds and they've got a lot of prey, it's probably not the best idea.
Yes, super challenging.
Yes,
yeah, it can be. Terriers.
Yeah.
Just going back to when you said a Malinois is your favorite breed. So if someone's going to get a Malinois, again, it's another question we get all the time. People ask us all the time. I think it's more for their own ego. But
Broly and Scooter, you know.
Yeah, like they always ask us. And, you know, a lot of people in the city don't have them. Mm-hmm. So they always ask us. And then if someone were to get a Malinois, or let's say someone wanted to, do you think people should only get a Malinois if they're at least going to do some type of sport or a competition?
Yeah, I think. Okay, I think there's always a few, like even with good breeders, they're not all going to be working level dogs, but that should be the aim of any breeder of a Malinois because they're a working breed dogs.
Yeah.
So, you know, regardless on the litter, that is their goal. Yeah. And they'll have a few that won't make the cut and they're still good dogs and they might be lower drive. And so you'll have the occasional one that might be suited to just a really active home, like hiking and stuff like that. But I would say for the most part, they should have an outlet. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Good. Yeah, because a lot of people would ask us, hey, we want to get a Malinois, we're active, but it just doesn't cut it.
They need brain stimulation as well as physical. And although you can get their physical needs out in one way, there's that mental aspect that really, for a Malinois, if it's unfulfilled, can lead to issues later, I think.
Got it. Okay, so I think we'll talk about some training stuff. So let's say someone's going to go get a new puppy. Mm-hmm. And they want to start doing sport. Mm-hmm. So they get a puppy, 8, 9 weeks, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What are the first few things they should work on?
Relationship with their dog. And also, for me personally, I like to teach the dogs how to use their brain. So a lot of like games and free shaping and a lot of body awareness skills, especially for sport, because you're putting a lot of demands, you know, for positions and, you know, what stylized you picture you like and even your healing, and you really need to teach them the skills to be able to do that properly.
Got it.
So body awareness stuff for sure.
So you always talk a lot about free shaping versus like luring and stuff like that.
Luring has its place for sure, but I do like, especially with young dogs, teaching them to free shape.
Can you explain a little bit of the difference and then why you really like free shaping?
Yeah, free shaping is normally done with a clicker because you can mark things very precisely with a clicker. And if it's, you know, taught properly, the click is very classically conditioned. Ooh, I did something good. I'll do it again. So free shaping is, okay, you have this end goal that you want the dog to achieve. Free shaping is clicking and rewarding for parts along the journey to that end goal. Right, so if you waited for the end goal, the dog would get frustrated and go, I don't know, I'm just gonna give up. But by going, okay, you took a step towards that perch I want you to put your front feet on, I'm gonna click and reward that. And then they take another step and I click and reward that. And then they take another step and I click and reward. And then they put a foot on there and I jackpot them. And they go, wow, any movement towards that perch, I got rewarded. So the reason why I like it is because you're teaching them how to use their brain and how to participate in their obedience and have a little bit of power in making decisions to get a reward. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you've got that dopamine effect in the brain of making good choices and, you know, achieving a goal together. So, you know, that's kind of why I like them, learning how to problem solve and how to think for themselves and how to, again, be an active participant in their obedience. Because if you're just luring a dog onto a perch, there's not a lot of thought process going on in that. You've got food in front of their face, and of course they're going to go with the food, but are they really learning what you want? How many repetitions of that behavior is it going to take for them to learn? Whereas if you free shape it, they're like, I get it. I understand. Mm-hmm. I can do this again.
Exactly. Good. Yeah. So if someone were to get a new puppy, you would say they should pretty much have a very strong foundation through obedience with free shaping, almost everything.
There's a component to learning that I'll do for sure, because you want muscle memory of certain things. So, you know, that's part of it. But I like a bit of shaping with the puppies, especially.
Got it.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, a lot of people, especially when they do get a new puppy or they want to do sport, a lot of people that we find, they struggle with not just the engagement and building the relationship, but even if they want to start teaching a heel, a lot of people struggle with just keeping the dog in their heel. So you would free shape the heel as well, exactly like you taught us.
I like a certain head position, so I do free shape that. Well, actually, I have free shaped a head position. Normally what I do now, so I can be a little bit more nitpicky on the exact head position I like, is I teach them I free shape a target stick, and then I'll use my target stick to shape a head position I like.
Yeah.
And the reason I like that is, again, I can be very nitpicky because I am a very nitpicky person when it comes to obedience, but I can be really precise with the head position I like. I can get it proofed very easily with my hand on the outside, with a ball in my hand, with treats in my hand. I can get it proofed to where I like it. And then when I take my lure away when I'm moving, it's not a big deal to have my hand on the outside of the dog, because they're like, oh, I know this already.
Good.
So that's kind of how I like.
And if someone were to get an older dog, let's say someone buys a sport prospect dog, I don't know, and the dog is 8 months or something. Should they work on the same thing, or should it be a little different if the dog is older?
Well, they, in theory, should work on the same thing.
Yeah.
but it depends on if the dog's had foundation done. And what kind of foundation that dog has had done. If it's a green dog, then potentially you could. But also, like, really the skill of teaching them how to learn and how to be free with offering behaviors and, again, teaching a more operant dog, it's a lot easier when they're babies. Because if the dogs are taught that they can't make decisions and they can't try new behaviors without potentially being corrected for it, then sometimes the dog will just sit there and be like, I don't know what to do. And that makes it hard, because then you can't really, you know, teach them to be free about offering stuff if they're just sitting there like, I'm just nervous about what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So it can be tricky with it. A little bit is the personality of the dog, and a little bit is, again, that foundation that's already been done with the dog.
Got it. Very nice, very nice. That leads me to a couple other questions, actually. So what are you currently, do you have any big mistakes you made with Fizz as you're raising him, as he was a puppy, that maybe you would do differently now?
I think the problems that I have with Fizz, I don't think I would change.
Yeah.
Because I love him the way he is, and I love his enthusiasm. And, you know, how can you be disappointed that he's trying too hard? But I think also, like, my first Malinois, who unfortunately I lost young because of kidney failure, she was pretty medium drive. Like, she was lovely. She was 100% heart. She was, I loved her to pieces. But she was, like, I was always drive building, like, get her higher, like, frustrate her, like, she liked that fight. And I think maybe I took the same approach with him, assuming that they were going to be similar.
Yes.
And I probably should have capped him a little bit more on his enthusiasm.
Okay, got
Not
it.
Capped, but maybe, like, put a little bit more layering of the stillness and stuff like that. But again, like, he might have been the same regardless of how I did things as a puppy, and I honestly wouldn't change a thing about him. So
great. Now, do you believe, how would you say you're raising Punky? Similar to Fizz or a little differently?
Similar to Fizz, but she's a different dog than Fizz too. So you do have to have that certain finesse with deciding, you know, where you need to go and what you need to work harder on with her. She's naturally more independent, so a lot of hers is still, even at this point, at a year old, with just engagement and her making good decisions to stay connected. She needs that. Like, I know she can have a nice head position. I know that she can heal very nice, but she's also the dog that's that's like in the middle of really nice healing. She can be like, "Oh, squirrel!" Like, just like totally like zone out. Like, so, it's similar but also different.
Got it. Do you want to actually quickly let us know about what you're currently doing with the rehab? And how people can apply this to their day-to-day life if they were to do, like, a session with you?
So at the place that I work at is called SOAR. It's Southern Ontario Animal Rehab, and it's a vet clinic that does a lot of, like, post-surgery, like, a lot of disc dogs, post-cruciates, some senior dogs with arthritis, and then we also see some of the sport dogs as well. So because of the sports, especially like those really demanding sports physically, you know, teaching them some fitness is not a bad idea, so that we can cut down on the injuries, especially with the Malinois, who, you know, really try to injure themselves daily. So I do try to incorporate a lot of fitness into their stuff as well, and their obedience for fitness is different than their obedience for sport, because I have different expectations, and I'm more conscious of their form when they're doing their movements, and more conscious that they're even in their push-ups, and so it's a little bit different, but it's still challenging mentally, and it's still like for the benefit of sport, but it's more like flexibility. So, you know, the bigger, the longer you can elongate a muscle, the more power you can generate. So something simple like stretching exercises and warming them up properly so they don't, you know, have a tear, or teaching them body awareness or appropriate reception so that they know where their body is in space. So if they step wrong, they can easily fix it so they don't tear a cruciate. So those are all things that, you know, are super important with our sport dogs, or even the weekend warriors that go and play ball on the weekends, you know.
Has Fizzy had an injury before?
Yeah, he injured a toe.
Yes.
Of course. you know, which is really hard to rest, because A, he doesn't rest, and B, how do you rest a toe? And it was, you know, frustrating, because again, I can't, you know, tie his leg up to rest it, and he's not going to self-regulate you know, exercises. So it was a lot of like laser and a lot of like rest and therapies, different therapies that I had to use with him to get him 100%. And will he be injured again? Probably. But if I can minimize it through proper fitness and warm-ups and stuff, then, you know, all the better for him. You know?
Got it. Oh, good. Like what I asked you earlier about biggest mistake with Fizz, I know you didn't really seem like you made any mistakes with him.
It's not that I didn't make mistakes with him, but I wouldn't change him.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So that would lead me to, what would you say you're spending your most effort working on with Fizz now to prepare for FCI?
Well, definitely I need to get him used to tracking on. It's probably going to be on, I assume, dirt. So I'm just tracking him on dirt right now to get him acclimatized to that. And again, keeping him calm.
Yeah.
Because if he goes a little bit over, he can be leaky in his obedience and be vocal, and, you know, he breathes like he's like running a marathon, you know. So with him at this point, it's a lot of keeping him a little bit calmer in his obedience, because you know, he needs to wait when I throw his dumbbells, and he needs to, you know, be, you know, not quite so active and like crazy in some of the exercises. So that's really my goal for him, just actually containing him a little bit better.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad, I mean, out of all the issues to have, I mean, again,
it's probably the best one.
Yeah, like he just wants to do well. He wants, you know, it's not just about the ball. He actually wants to please.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is lovely.
And I think we have one last question. So what would you say the most common mistakes are that a new sport dog handler would make? So I'm sure you've probably met quite a few over the years, new sport dog handlers. Is there like a constant mistake that you often see?
I think some dog sports handlers, I think at one point a lot of people said that you had to limit their social interactions and limit their food in order to make them work. And I think that's a bad approach to take with sport dogs.
Yeah.
I think you should never, my love is not contingent on how well the dog training trial goes.
Exactly.
It's not contingent on how well a training session goes. My love and my food and my adoring, you know, attitude towards my dog is not contingent on any of that. And I think that's, you know, making a dog do it because of that is, I think, a poor approach to take.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, that's very, very well said. Very well said. One of the most common mistakes I was told, which I know I brought up to you when I originally met you, was let the puppy be a puppy, which I know a lot of people still say. Let the dog grow up and just get away with things.
Don't train them until they're an adult.
It's a common sport dog philosophy, and I knew it was ridiculous when I heard it. I don't know why I listened to it. I'm like, this doesn't make any damn sense.
I think there's a line, a delicate line going both ways. I think building a skill set when they're young, making it super fun, making the work play and the play work, I think is very important. But I also think that you really shouldn't go overboard because then you're going to burn the dog out, especially if the dog gets bored and goes, oh, we're doing this again.
Yes.
So I think there's that delicate balance of not doing nothing and doing lots of little pieces, but making it super fun for the dog. Like, super fun. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that is super important when they're young. Like, and then honestly, when they're older, you know, it comes together so seamlessly. Like, it can, because you taught them all the skills. And even, again, if you have to pop a collar or say that was wrong, they also know why they're being corrected. Yeah. And they're like, oh, sorry, my bad. And then, you know, I think that's also a big mistake, is some people correct their dog and their dog has no idea what the correction's for, you know, and they haven't taught them what the correction's for. And then it's just being mean to your dog.
Yeah. And the dog gets very stressed out during all of obedience.
Correct.
And especially if they haven't done it when the dog's young and they haven't taken any criticism, I found a big backlash in that as well.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So I think that's all the questions we have. Cass, do you have any extra questions?
Where can people find you if they want to find out more about you, if they want to follow you on social media?
Well, Fisgeek the Malinois has
that's Donna's Instagram favorite account.
Donna's favorite Donna account.
And then I think I'm on Instagram on Candace. Yes, Candace. I think that's what my name is on that.
Candace.
Is spelled
K-A-N-D-I-S.
Got it. Yeah, that's where they can find her on Instagram. And Fisgeek the Malinois. Fisgeek's named after a little monster from the show.
Yeah, the Dark Crystal. Yeah. It's a perfect name for
it. It is a perfect name for it.
Yeah, so if anyone has any questions, they can reach out to her. Again, thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you all soon. Candace, again, it's at on Instagram at Candace, yes, Candace, and Fisgeek the Malinois.
Yep. Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks, Candace. Bye. Bye, guys.